Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglund from the offices of Rational Exuberance here in the heart of the historic core of downtown Los Angeles, in the middle of the Art Deco wonder that is the Eastern Columbia Building. This is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour coming to you, as always, a little late on a Monday, but as always, faithfully, you and my co-host.
What? What are you saying? You're exhausted.
I'm exhausted.
You are just...
I worked really hard today.
It's been a long day. It's been a long weekend. Actually, for both of us, I've been traveling all day just to get here. I am Phil Lernis.
You are.
Your co-host in podcasting, your producing partner, and now I am finally sitting down by your side.
as if you never left.
As if I've always been here and always will be. Boy, I got to tell you... Everything these days seems to be coming up, Dean Haglund.
Everything's coming up, Haglund.
As the blog previewing this very show stated, I thought so eloquently, so succinctly, so, dare I say, accurately, it's Dean Haglund with a vengeance these days.
That's right. I'm coming at you on all eight cylinders.
It really brought to mind the anagram, of course, that Pliskin came up with from your name.
Right.
Lead handgun has never been more appropriate.
Or more handgunny.
And, of course, mine, Hell Inspires, is always...
That's
fairly
exactly
appropriate,
as it's always been.
By the way,
tell me,
Pliskin did come up with new artwork for us.
Did
I don't
he?
Know if you saw this,
no.
And it was a template. I don't know if template's the right word for it, but for a kind of a vintage-looking T-shirt.
Oh,
and it's a really great depiction of the two of us, and it just says at the bottom, "Chill Pack Hollywood Hour," and at the top, "Your friends in podcasting." And it really is a good. It would be a good-looking T-shirt. I would wear that T-shirt, as you know. I like now wearing the T-shirts at the official events.
Oh, that's right,
and that would be a fun one.
Well, gee whiz, what do we have to do to get a...
know about making T-shirts.
I
mean, you've designed. I mean, we should actually talk to Pliskin about at least, we should make
Pliskin,
a small run,
please,
of them. And,
send us an email to begin the conversation, is what I say.
So this is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, and we welcome you no matter how you listen to us, whether you are listening to us on our website, chillpackhollywood.com, where you can download or stream many episodes.
We're
going to be putting up a lot of back episodes when we stop being so busy.
Yep.
But there's right now, there's more than 40 there, I
Look
think.
Look at that. That's a lot.
And also, of course, through chillpackhollywood.com, you can subscribe to this show via iTunes.
Look at that.
And if you do...
We
and you wouldn't mind taking the time to rate the show and even write up a little review. Let's face it, these things matter. People like to hear what other people say. User reviews matter. You know, when I'm buying something on Amazon, I do read the reviews.
You do.
It's very easy to kind of weed out the ones that aren't
crazy.
Aren't referring to the exact model that you're looking at of whatever. But they really do... they are helpful.
They are.
There's a lot that aren't, but they're really, it's a helpful tool.
Okay.
So please do that.
I'm going to do that.
But no matter how you listen to the show, maybe you listen to us on Jackalope Radio.
Jackalope Radio, very lovely.
We want to thank Jackalope. We haven't talked about Jackalope Radio in a long time.
Haven't.
It's very cool being on Jackalope Radio. There was a time when we were having trouble with our website. We were
Remember
having
that?
Trouble with the network that we used to be on.
X-Nay on the network.
And the only way for a brief period of time to actually hear your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour was through the dogged determination and loyalty of Jackalope Radio.
God bless them, everyone.
And, of course, we can be heard on the Talk Superstation at TalkSuperstation.com. So we're pleased by that.
We are pleased by everyone.
Now... before we talk about where you were all day today,
because
you were on set, you were shooting, and I know you're probably so exhausted that's the last thing you want to talk about.
I want to talk about it. No, I don't.
No, I mean you never do, right? Like when you get home from set, the last thing you want to do is talk about what just happened that day.
And it's also so much happened that it's like, how did it go on set? Good.
Yeah,
that's like really all you could say.
And at the same point, it doesn't matter how it went because you're right back at it tomorrow.
Yeah.
So there's the battle might have been won, it might have been lost, but the war continues.
Right.
So
and it's hard to go. There was an inside joke where we all laughed excessively for 25 minutes. Like, nobody's, how, you can't even set that up.
So maybe when we warm you up into some other topics, we'll talk about what you were shooting, because it is very exciting.
Wow.
But you were in Las Vegas.
Viva Las Vegas.
Now, do you like Las Vegas? I don't know if I've ever asked you this before.
I think you should ask that. You know, I have a funny ambivalence towards Las Vegas. I sort of like some of the architecture, and I do love its history. But I'm not a gambler. I'm not, I don't bet two the hard way or 15 on black, whatever
we're,
the hell.
We're kind of the same way in that we do gamble, and it's called having a career in the arts.
Yeah, exactly. I know. So
we bet on creativity.
I know. And you take your shot at auditions, and you throw scripts out there.
You know, or the people you work with. You know, absolutely. You're gambling that this assemblage of people is going to turn this particular project, whatever it might be, into something other than a colossal waste of time.
Right. And hopefully pay your rent. So these things are the gamble of our daily lives. And what better way not to relax than to gamble some more.
Exactly.
Yeah, right?
Exactly. And yet, so therefore, what a wonderful kind of thing to be plying your trade in Sin City, in
exactly.
Las Vegas.
I was playing Vegas.
For those who don't follow along with you at Twitter, and of course, you can be followed at Twitter, twitter.com/dhaglin.
It's so easy.
And I actually referenced some of your adventures myself on Twitter this weekend, because my adventures in Turlock, not quite as glamorous, not as many green Orion slave women in Turlock.
I doubt that's true.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I shouldn't kid myself.
Not, yeah.
Anyway, I'm on Twitter at twitter.com/PhilLarenis.
Look at you.
And so you were there.
Yes.
For the big creation, entertainment, Star Trek convention. It's an annual event. There is no bigger Star Trek convention anywhere in the known universe.
In the known universe, that's right. Maybe FedCon might be bigger in Germany, but that's not just Star Trek. That's all sorts of sci-fi.
But, I mean, this is a huge deal. As you love to say, it always gets both Shatner and Picard, because you refuse to ever refer to Patrick Stewart by his real name.
That's
true. Or Sir Patrick Stewart.
Sir Patrick.
It's always Picard. Like, Picard. You walk out of X-Men... three, complaining about the CGI effects on Picard, which is really interesting. Right.
It's true. Great name.
So you were there for 3 days.
Yes.
You did two, as I understand it, sold-out shows.
Sold-out. Packed shows.
Improv comedy.
Improv comedy with Denise Crosby.
Who could not be
more
a nicer person.
So sweet.
I mean, I don't know if people get that impression. I don't know what impression people have of her from her acting or whatever.
As Tasha Yar on Next Generation.
She is so strong and so grounded. I wouldn't necessarily expect that the sweetness that is so authentic that comes out of her when you meet her would be such a large part of her makeup.
I know, right? You would think that third-generation Hollywood that she is.
She's a fighter. She's a survivor. And she is those things, and at the same time, really genuinely sweet.
Delightful. And, you know, she doesn't really have improv training, but she does have fearlessness. And so she has this joy, joie de vivre on stage, and a fearlessness, which is so handy to have in improv, that it is easy to improvise with her, even though, technically, she is not a trained improviser. But it doesn't matter, because if I can, like, steer it and drive it and set it up, all I have to do is lob them to her, and she can bat them out of the park.
Well, and after all, you so often had done entire shows, traveled the world doing your one-man X-Files show. Not one man, in the sense that actually there were many other people who would be on stage, but all of them were people in the audience.
Right.
None of them had training.
Some of them weren't even sober.
No.
Yeah. And yet the show still was hilarious.
So the show that you did with her, both shows were, I'm imagining, Q show?
Q versus Tasha Yar.
Hyde and Q?
Hyde and Q. It was hilarious. These are improvised shows where I basically challenged Tasha Yar to a series of improvised challenges to see if she's worthy to join the continuum.
Nice.
Yes. And we filmed them in HD and burnt them onto DVD and sold them to the fans. And so people have asked, are they available online? And my answer is not yet.
Not yet.
But, well, maybe I'll put it on my website. Or maybe just email me and say I would like one, and we'll just make a little PayPal thing so I don't have to fill up all the store with tons of DVDs.
We've talked about this before, and I think at some point we will end up doing it as our distribution of other things, you know, which has been really the Rational Exuberance releasing has kicked off officially with the release of The Truth Is Out There.
I know.
Our documentary, and we'll talk about this a little bit. But when this allows us to grow larger, of course, we plan on making other films and releasing them, hopefully helping other filmmakers release their films. But it would be fantastic if you could make, maybe for short periods of time and cycle them out, some of your catalog of your comedy shows available as digital downloads.
Ah, now you're thinking, sir.
See, I mean, that would be, and especially if they did kind of cycle out, could have a few, because, of course, I watched, I mean, dozens of them. Now, of course, some of them, the video quality of the original recordings, because they may have been shot 12, 13 years ago when nobody was thinking about, hey, what happens when we want it as a digital download?
Right, exactly.
What the what?
Uh-huh.
What are you?
Yeah, that's crazy talk. You know, I'm going to deal. Oh, no, it's kicked off. Hopefully.
So I think that would be exciting if you could have. But I haven't seen all these. There are so many fun shows.
Oh, that's them not leaving a message.
This is
the best show
ever. This says professional podcasting.
Doesn't it?
You know, as podcast royalty, when we were interviewed on by Mark Hirschhorn on the Succotash show.
Yeah, remember that?
Right, the podcast about comedy podcasts. You know, he referred to us as podcast royalty because we've been doing this so long. And after more than 4 years, we are blissfully unencumbered by technical prowess.
That's what makes us the royalty.
But listen to the interesting word usements I'm structuring.
I love it, everything.
After the train lag that I'm from which I am suffering. So drop me some names. Any fun? I mean, here's the thing about having been with you at so many conventions and everything. And of course, we're going to be going to Dragon Con in Atlanta to show The Truth Is Out There.
Yeah.
We've got sound effects
in
the background.
Effects.
This is fantastic.
Clown sound effects.
You know, it is fun. You always get to be in the signing room, and you get to rub elbows with so many other notables of the world of sci-fi. And here specifically, Star Trek. And I love that kind of you're odd man out. One of these things is not the same, and yet they love you. They love you there.
Well, and it's the joy of those improvised Q and Star Trek shows that allows me to keep coming back. And invariably, there's always somebody goes, you know, I'm not a Star Trek fan, but I love The X-Files. I can't believe you're here. Oh, my gosh, you've saved the day sort of thing.
That's fun.
They've often come with like a friend or something and just sort of tagged along, think it'll be a drag, and then come to my table and are thrilled and will buy, you know, 8x10s and X-File memorabilia. And it's totally great.
So at these things, do you get a chance to obviously with Denise, but do you get a chance to hang out with any?
A little bit. Yeah, you sort of get to the green room and maybe at lunchtime, you know. So, of course, Denise and I had to hang out a lot because we were doing the show together.
Right.
And we were opening for Tim Russ, who has a blues band. So his band came on immediately after our show. So we were technically like the comedy show.
Oh, that's fun.
And then followed by the blues band that they played. And they're an excellent band. Tim Russ was
Tuvok.
Tuvok
in Voyager.
In Voyager. And excellent actor and
also,
excellent musician.
I believe he was in Star Trek VI, if I'm not mistaken. He was a crew member on Captain Sulu's Excelsior.
Yes.
And they call back to that in a Voyager episode.
They do. Yeah, that's right. So that was cool. But you know what was the thrill, actually, for me? I brought... I don't know if my brother is listening, so I'm going to spoil his
Christmas.
Is this
Christmas. Jeff? Or?
Jeff, yeah. Okay. If he's listening, just turn off the podcast now because I'm going to spoil your Christmas
Why
gift.
Should he be any different than anyone else? Zingers.
Zingers. Don Marshall from Land of the Giants was right across from me this time.
And he guest starred in at least one or
maybe one
more,
of
the
original
Star Trek.
The original series. Oh, TOS.
No, that's the gangsters.
Yes.
The original gangsters.
The original gangsters. No, but he had... Okay, so this is a long story. I don't even know if it's worth it. But basically, he had a model of their spaceship from the 1969, still in the wrapper. right? The plastic model to build at
from Land of the Lost.
Land of the Giants.
Land of the Giants.
Land of the Giants, right? And this was a Irwin Allen series where alien or humans crash on a planet where everything's the same, only everybody is 30 feet tall. Uh-huh. Everything is extra large. So the spaceship my brother built as a kid, and then I played with it, and I broke it as a young child. And so I bought that damn thing again, and then I had him sign an 8x10, which said, "To Jeff, Dina, sorry he broke your toy," 35 years later.
So that's awesome.
And it's signed Don Marshall, your friend from Land of the Giants. I think that, you know, it's taken some 30-odd years to get over that breaking of the toy. But now I think that will be all forgiven this Christmas.
That's great. That is a great gift.
That's a great gift.
I loved following two people. I loved, you know, because I was keeping tabs on what was going on in Vegas via the Twitter.
Oh, so you knew that we won the world's record for the most costumed Star Trek people in one room.
I saw that.
Yeah, 1,400 people.
That was exciting.
Yes.
And I followed along with that because I follow the Televixen on Twitter, and you gave a very nice shout out to her on Twitter as well. I appreciated that. And of course, she co-hosts DVD Geeks, a really good show, really good podcast. We had her co-host and co-producer of the show, John Champion, as a guest
on
your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. And they ran a review, I guess, last week maybe, or the week before, on The Truth Is Out There.
Yeah.
Very, very nice review. Very thoughtful. And of course, I'm going to be kind of a guest co-host an upcoming episode. I get to address, take them to task for some of the things. When they talked about how beautifully shot the film was.
You can't.
Looked like it cost $10 million.
Right.
Quite frankly, it's the best review I've ever heard in my life. But short of calling me cute, it's the best review ever.
That's the best review.
But so that'll be a lot of fun. And
oh, yes.
I'm sorry.
No. But I was going to say, as we've said before the show, you know, this documentary often shows the reviewer's point of view more than
It does. And we'll talk about this on their show, but you know, it's really interesting that, you know, our advertising for the film The Truth Is Out There, and for those of you who aren't familiar, if there's anyone who listens to us who isn't, the website for the film is truth-is-out-there.com. You can see the trailer and learn about the film, and it's for sale on DVD, two-disc DVD collector's edition, and soon on Blu-ray, though only in the U.S., the United Kingdom, and all of Europe at this point.
Right.
Anyway, you know, we advertise, and it's right there on the poster, The Truth Is Out There, comedy, consciousness, conspiracy.
Yeah.
And what was really interesting was that they, in their review on the DVD Geeks show, really focused on the comedy and the conspiracy and kept saying these questions and having questions and, well, this doesn't pay off. I mean, I'll get into the specifics on their show. But what was interesting about it was every single answer that they were looking for fell within the consciousness section of the film, about which they spoke not at all. And what's interesting, of course, is that one of the people in the film states quite explicitly that one of the pitfalls of our modern age is that we pay so much attention to the things on the periphery that we don't pay attention to the thing in the center. And it really is interesting how, depending on one's perspective, we've made a movie about conspiracy, or we've made a movie about comedy, or we've made a movie about consciousness. The truth is, we've made a movie about comedy, consciousness, and conspiracy.
Right, all three.
And really, to tune out any one of the parts, you are going to get an incomplete view. You are going to miss some of the pieces that you need to really build something rewarding for yourself. And yet, that said, they really did enjoy the film, and it was a very positive review.
Interesting.
You were on Coast to Coast AM.
How about that?
With our friend Rob Simone.
Last night.
Last night.
That was fun.
And
we had a lovely conversation.
I couldn't stay up that late, of course. Well, 10 p.m. on the West Coast.
That is late. But you can hear it, of course. They stream it, I believe, coasttocoast.com.
And, oh, wait, it's coasttocoastam.com.
That's right. and Rob Simone guest hosting for George Nori, who does an excellent job. And I was very flattered to be on from the 10 to 11 spot. And then 11 to 12, it was Ramtha from What the Bleep Do We Know.
Right, right.
Which is really fast. I was like very honored to be in the same same show as that. That was really cool.
Yeah, you were the warm-up.
I helped them for Ramtha.
And Ramtha played blues. Has a great blues band. Very few people know this.
Who would have guessed? 30,000-year-old
Ramtha
blues band.
And Tim Russ.
No, but
who would think this New Age spiritualist and an unfeeling Vulcan could make such beautiful music together?
Yet they did. So, yes, it was great, and it's great having known Rob for many years because he brought back many stories that we had shared together, and I thought it couldn't go better, and he said the same thing.
I heard from someone that I went to high school with back in Cupertino, California,
back in
1987, and this man lives in Arizona, and he dropped me a line saying, I was listening to Coast last night, and the first guest on the show, actor Dean Haglund, kept mentioning you. So that was quite...
Wow, he could not believe it. How does that guy know you? For 4 years now, side by side.
4 years, yeah. Have we mentioned that?
No, yeah. Not at all.
As part of that work furlough program.
I know. I think I've done my community service for whatever the hell.
I was actually thinking about how, you know, I'm on a train and a bus to get here. You've been on the set all day, and we will. We'll talk about what you were shooting because it is going to be very exciting.
That's exciting.
I'm letting you warm up a little bit because I think a lot of people will be interested.
Were they?
But, yeah, I think so.
We've been hinting. We should continue to hint. I don't have all the details of like...
Anyway, I'll ask you some questions about it. Anyway, you know, it's just... and I'm thinking about our traveling that's coming up with Atlanta and then Portland.
Portland's going to be good.
And we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But just, boy, we've really got to work out the logistics of, okay, how are we going to do these shows? Because I think maybe instead of just pre-recording, it might be fun to figure out a way... To
record at the events.
At these events.
Yes, in the hotel room, if we can't be it on stage with a live audience.
And I just think it's so much fun, because when you think about how we started, you know, we had production offices next door to each other, and it really was, you know, there's not much going on Monday morning.
I know, right?
Let's just do this. And we would, you know, talk, and then after we would be off, we would talk about, you know... What kind of projects do we want to be working on?
Right.
What do we want to be doing with our lives?
And now
we are doing it with our lives.
Right.
And somehow we're still managing to fit the podcast in, which is pretty cool.
Well, and I find this an excellent production meeting that we always have.
That's true.
Like, you know, hey, let's you know, have the production meeting on air and plan out the next
week. Also be able to let go a little bit of what has just happened in the last week and then look ahead.
Speak of movies we've seen, that sort of thing. Not that I've seen any movies.
By the way, I don't think we've mentioned this, and we should. You know, I mentioned that The Truth is out there, is available for sale at truth-is-out-there.com. The reason we are able to make the film available in the UK and Europe...
Yes.
We can mention her name,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
I mean, absolutely. I don't think we've mentioned...
No, the kindness.
The kindness of Linda Van Manen.
Yes.
Who is making it possible.
She is technically our European distributor.
Yeah. She is handling all of it. And really, getting things to clear customs and doing all that was
such a
nightmare.
Yeah.
And she was... again, dogged in her determination and her loyalty.
Yes,
and,
to which we are thankful.
Yeah,
and
thankful,
grateful.
Thankful beyond words. And also, we say this not only because we thank her, but truly, what's been so exciting is everyone who's been getting the film. We've been hearing from about how much they love the movie, how much you know it really. We're giving them a lot for their money. We really are. And we knew that we had a movie that people would want to watch more than once. And not only would they want to watch it more than once, they would want to show their friends.
Yes.
And so, you know, the thing is we appreciate hearing from you about how you value it and you really enjoy the film. And at the same time, at least in your hearts, hold gratitude for Linda Van Manen if you are in Europe, in the UK, and you receive this film because it really, she's making it possible.
Yes. And so for that, we say hearty hello. Thank you. I don't know.
Now get back to work. Now I'm sending you more orders to fulfill. So get back to work, Linda. Don't let it go to your head. She gets so, sometimes she gets so, such a big ego.
Oh, yeah.
Throwing her power around.
I have the power.
I won't distribute any more of these unless you cut 5 minutes out of the second reel. I don't know what voice I was just doing.
That she doesn't sound like that at all.
Okay. So, yeah. So you were on set. Do you want to talk about this now or should we talk about it later?
No. Let's talk about it now.
Really? Okay.
Yes. This is exciting.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. You are back. You are on set shooting today, tomorrow, the next day.
Yeah.
You're back on television. With a vengeance.
Yes.
Episodic television.
Yes.
And not just any episodic series.
No.
You are back shooting episodes of The X-Files.
Technically, that is sort of correct. I am the host of the new network called U2 TV, U as in Y-O-U and then T-O-O. So it's not U2 the band, but U as well kind of thing.
Right.
U2 TV. And they are showing reruns of The X-Files in order and then having me speak in interstitials in between, telling some of the backstory of what happened, some funny bits, and at the same time, you have the ability to go online and shoot these 15-second little mini movies that we show in those interstitials as well that relate to the episode.
There's a lot of social. It's kind of this interesting combination of I kind of liken it to what Robert Osborne, for example, would do on Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah.
Come out, introduce the film, explain some things about the backstory, its context, its significance, things that are just interesting, illuminating the manuscript little bit, such as it was. And then though bringing it up to date with more direct social media interaction.
So there will be this ability to go to the website and record instantly 15-second little movies that we will then immediately show in that same episode, based on a topic that we give you. So, for instance, if there's an episode about clones, we'll say, hey, have you ever been cloned? Or if you could, would you clone yourself and why or why not? And then we can start this sort of little discussion with everybody sort of making these little movies and these little what we're calling fame spots, because they're little 15-second movies that we then show and have some interesting dialogue and some fun in between watching X-File episodes.
And you know what my 15-second film would be about? The clones, right?
What?
I would have a clone who, because clones, sometimes the genetic patterning gets a little blurry, right? Yeah. This clone would have Tourette's.
Ah.
And in the midst of a really foul-mouthed diatribe, I would trip my clone, and then I would get called away by the police. I would get hauled away, and I would be charged with making an obscene clone fall.
That deadly silence you hear is now
is the sound of people downloading other podcasts from other podcast hosts.
That's right. Where indeed the jokes
it's very exciting. So you're back on television.
Back on television
as Dean Hagelin.
Yes, on a brand new network.
On a show called The X-Files.
On the show called The X-Files. That's right.
So they obtained syndication rights for the show.
They bought
and,
60 episodes to start, and they're going to buy more once those 60 show. So that's the first 5 seasons, I think.
No. Wouldn't 60 would be like 3 seasons.
Oh, yeah, the first 3 seasons. Yeah.
Right. Well, that makes sense if they're 20. Doing it in thirds. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because
it ran 9 seasons.
There you go.
That's very clever. So that'll be exciting, and that's I'm shooting that
I can't wait for them to get all the way ahead to season 9 and jump the shark. And they just keep cutting back to you weeping. Why'd they do it?
Why'd they make this happen?
No, listen. The coffins shouldn't be the same size.
I gotta tell you people, we're alive. We're alive.
That's exciting. So we don't know exactly when that will air and all of that, but we'll keep people informed.
And I'm not sure even what channel this new network will be on. I believe it's with your Turner... Time Warner cable package.
Yeah.
So if you have a Time Warner cable package, you'll definitely see me if you're DirecTV.
But we'll get all the
religious and the.
But also, it seems to me that this is going to have a huge internet presence too, because so much of this is going to come that way.
Totally.
Part of your contract, as I know, involves a certain amount of hours of social networking that you have to do with this. So it might be the sort of thing where even people in other countries will be able to join in almost from the get-go.
That'd be fun.
And then, of course, I would imagine, since they will then own this stuff, that it might be syndicated to other nations, even with your...
My face on it.
Yeah, with your wraparounds. I always love that.
The wraparounds.
Yeah.
I will be big in Bangladesh once again.
Once again. and by the way... Big in Bangladesh is one of the first Dean Hagelin comedy shows that we have to, from 1977.
1977.
You opened for George Harrison, and we have to get that as a digital download.
Big in Bangladesh.
That's right. May have just acquitted myself for the obscene clone fall.
I saw,
speaking of stage comedy.
Tell me now.
I saw a show at the Sacred Fools.
Yes.
We've talked about the Sacred Fools Theater before.
Love that place.
You know, they do really interesting work. And I saw a show that won many LA Weekly Awards, and it's been brought back as a revival. It's called Watson, and it's the last case of Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
And it's been written and directed by Jaime Robledo, and it's kind of a pastiche of alternate Sherlock Holmes stories, such as The 7% Solution, for example, and the one that Caleb Carr wrote. And, and so it exists in that alternate universe world, all of which seem to in some ways try to address the fact that at some point in the official canon, their Watson's narratives start to contradict each other. You know, so there's this really. So this is where it starts. It's set in this, but it's not a small cast, but it's it borrows a little bit of a page of the 39 Steps, where certain performers, such as Henry Dittmann, play multiple roles, and in fact, in one scene, Henry Dittmann plays, I think, six roles, and it's a tour de force, and he embodies every role in that scene. He also plays Moriarty, so he plays one of the leads in it. It's a phenomenal LA Weekly Award-winning performance that
he gives.
That
sounds awesome.
French Stewart from Third Rock from the Sun.
Stewart French?
French Stewart.
French Stewart, yeah.
Plays two roles in the film, and...
I
keep wanting it to be a film because he is so powerful in it. He plays the Queen of England, Queen Victoria Regina, and Sigmund Freud. And he is fantastic. It's just so funny and it's so wonderful. The whole cast is great. I do need to just point out, though, Scott Leggett, who plays Watson himself, is fantastic in it as well. Anyway, it was just such a fun thing, and it pulls off also an amazing trick because you actually care about the mystery. You actually are following it, as funny as it is. In fact, they thought they were dying on stage the night that we were there because no one was laughing, and it took the actors a little while to realize, oh, they're like we did on the very first screening of Truth Is Out There when we had that sneak preview screening. They're hating it. Oh, no. Wait, if they were hating it, they wouldn't be so silent.
Right.
It's because we were all wrapped up in the story of Watson.
Of Watson. Like, and how are they going to solve the murder?
Yeah, and and then what really are funny are all these action scenes, because they do these big action scenes and running on top of a train and horseback riding scenes and all this stuff.
On stage.
Yeah, on chairs double for the horses. And it's so funny and it's so imaginative. It's really funny and they get to parody action scenes in a really funny way.
Oh, that's awesome.
But by the second act, damn if these parodies are no longer simply funny, but actually really are exciting and thrilling.
Really?
Because the truth is, at some point, your brain kicks in and reminds you, oh yeah, all those action sequences are entirely fabricated and fake.
Yeah, right?
So if you lead with the fake, it's funny, but then at some point, it becomes thrilling.
You buy into that.
You buy into it.
Right. The mind tricks itself.
Because you care.
That's right. Which
so anyway,
is the joy of live theater in the first place.
It was, and sold out audiences.
How long is it running for?
I think one more week.
Wow.
But there's talk of it going to maybe a bigger house.
Look it.
And then who knows if New York will come calling.
Wow.
So very, very
locally produced. I love that.
You know, my old friend Dan Butler, with whom I collaborated on Karl Rove, I Love You. He's in New York doing a new play by Charles Bush. I think it opens this week. And what I've heard is that it's the role of Dan's life. And it's a great cast. But that it's a pretty sure bet to get picked up by Broadway.
Wow.
So that would be really cool.
That's really cool. Any name on what that show is?
Olive. I'll have it next week. Olive and Something. It's a brand new play.
Right.
And I know the playwright, and Julie Halston's in it. Richard Masser, who's a wonderful character actor. David Garrison. And so it's really good.
That's awesome.
Now, I also saw, in addition to the stage show, Watson,
I saw a
great, great play, and I saw really a terrible, terrible, terrible television show. And I bring this up because a movie based partly on the television show came out and tanked this weekend, and that was Glee in 3D, really tanked. But I watched... And I felt I wanted to talk about this because last week I talked about how excited I was that Project Runway is back. And mentoring and the creative process.
Everything you love about fashion design.
So I watched the Glee Project.
Oh, you did?
And this is where young people compete, acting, dancing, singing. And the winner at the end of the run, much like in Project Runway, they'll get to start their own line. At the end of Glee Project, they'll be on Glee next year.
As one of the, this is the long audition process for
now. Never mind that at the end of the episode that I saw, the only people left, I think there were five or six, are people you would shoot your television in to avoid seeing on a weekly series, and one of these people is going to win. And it was a fascinating episode because this one aspirant, who's a very good singer. Less an actor, and I don't remember the kid's name, unfortunately, but he refused to do something in an acting scene. He refused to kiss this actress on his own religious and moral grounds. Which was fascinating. And Ryan Murphy, the creator of Glee, who is the final judge in this competition,
as one would hope,
he says, you know, on the one hand, to this kid, I really admire your principles. On the other hand, as a showrunner, what am I going to have to do if I come down to the set and, you know, there's a holdup because you won't do something? And this young man who just knocked his musical performance out of the park, because he's a great singer, said, you know what? You're right. I think I should bow out.
Ah, just like that.
And suddenly, realizing that he couldn't be pushed into doing something he didn't want to do, suddenly they wanted him. Oh, no, I don't think you should do that. I don't think you should be hasty. You're thinking, and so much so that Ryan Murphy goes into his dressing room afterwards to tell him, I want to let you know that you've qualified to go ahead in the competition. We're going to get rid of someone else. And the kid kind of holds his ground and says, no, you know what? I think I've gone as far as I can do. I don't think this is for me.
Wow.
And Ryan Murphy pressures him to keep going. And I thought, you know, here's a show. I understand why people like Glee. I understand the reason that you hope they like Glee.
Right.
People of different shapes and sizes and ethnicities and all having a voice and being appreciated and being able, you know, and working together and all this stuff.
Right.
And ultimately, it's all driven by a guy who wants to turn this kid into something he is not.
Interesting.
Just like every other fucker in show business. What, I mean, seriously, pardon the language, but what a fucking dick.
Yeah.
And I mean, horrible.
That is
horrible. It's horrible.
You would think, okay, awesome. If that is your, if you're bringing that to the table, why don't we write that in?
Well, and he wanted to. He wanted
that, that moral...
but when this guy said, and that's what he realized he wanted to, only when he realized he couldn't have his way another way. And then, once he can't have his way this way, but don't you realize? Because what he keeps saying is, look, I've already pushed this as far as I can go, this young person says. I am not ready for this kind of stress, this kind of exposure, this kind of... He's a 20-year-old kid.
Right, that's a lot
to put on a 20-year-old kid. I mean, this business chews up and spits out even the successful young people.
Yeah, exactly.
And then once he, you know, really reveals what's in his heart, that I am not ready for this, then instead of saying, oh, well, I admire you knowing that and I wish you well, no, it's, but wait, don't make the mistake of your life.
Yeah, right.
It was
It's the power
horrible.
Of saying no. This is with a power when you say no, that suddenly everybody, you then step up and everyone else has to chase that no. As opposed to saying yes all the time, and then everybody goes, oh, yeah, well, he'll do anything, and nobody wants you. It's the power of saying no.
I was really – I don't offend easily, and that I found rather offensive.
You found that offensive. That is fascinating.
So,
how about that?
Whew.
Well, I'm not, for some reason, I'm not a Glee fan.
I know you're not.
I sort of think I should be, but it's everything I'm not watching. So I can imagine 3D Glee being way off my radar, and I could see they didn't even put the A Talent in that movie, that Glee 3D movie. So why would anybody go?
Right.
I don't get it.
Did you see any movies?
I haven't had a chance to see a movie because I was in Albuquerque last week and this week.
I know.
The plane doesn't have movies when it's less than an hour flight. So
okay, I am going to start with the big one.
Okay, hit it.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, tell me you saw it and this was the thing. We talked about this. I thought it was going to look – I said the trailer showed the whole movie. I wasn't interested in this sort of thing. It looked crappy. And you heard something that it might be good.
I heard that it was very good. Time Magazine said it's going to be hard to beat for the best film of the year.
Which shocks the hell out of me.
And Color Me Time Magazine.
What? Are you kidding me?
This, you know, isn't it interesting that not that long ago, not that many years ago, certainly not, you know, just a couple decades ago, if you were talking about a prequel, you were talking about people who were creatively bankrupt.
Right. Yeah.
Like Butch and Sundance the early years.
Yes, exactly. Young Sherlock Holmes.
And now with J.J. Abrams' Star Trek, the Casino Royale.
Casino Royale is a great example.
Craig, Batman Begins. You've got real creativity now in these. And Rise of the Planet of the Apes is right in there.
What?
Right in the discussion.
Are you kidding?
Much like Casino Royale, certainly was the best Bond film since Connery left, but may even surpass the Connery Bonds. Much like J.J. Abrams, Star Trek might be the pinnacle of the cinematic Star Trek franchise, yeah. So too might this be the best ape movie of them all.
Wow.
And by covering brand new ground and, most importantly, imaginatively shifting the point of view.
Wow.
The trailer is from the point of view of the human.
Yeah.
The movie is not at all from the point of view of the human.
Really?
James Franco, as overexposed as he is, not overexposed in this film because he's a supporting player.
Really?
And it doesn't matter ultimately that he is incapable of bringing what is needed to the climactic scene because he's the supporting actor.
Wow. So you're hanging the whole movie on that monkey?
On the monkeys, on the apes.
Yeah.
And it is emotionally powerful. It is exciting. You find yourself rooting in ways that surprise you.
Really?
It's about, much like the best of science fiction, without hitting you over the head with it, it is about things. It is about issues
social
that are facing right now.
Right.
And it's really quite something.
Really?
Yeah.
So I now should go see this as opposed to wait for it on the airplane or a DVD. Is that what you're suggesting?
I think you should.
Wow.
Yeah, at some point you need to see at least 10 films for our show, annual show, our top 10 films of the year, or, as it's also known, 10 films Dean Hagland has seen. Hey,
this
you know
is
the other
be a tough year to get that.
The other big blockbuster of the summer that I really enjoyed, of course, Harry Potter 7B, HP 7B, which is also my laptop, by the way, that went kaput this last week, the HP 7B.
HP 7B.
When it works, it's wonderful.
Right.
But,
HP 7B.
You know, and that was quite a crowning achievement. It's no Rise of the Planet of the Apes, though. But those two really are the crown jewels of the big budget studio releases
summer
this
temples,
summer.
Yeah.
But I was very interested to see that David Yates, the director of the last four Harry Potters, and Steve Kloves, who wrote most of the Harry Potters, they, by the way, HP 7B, Deathly Hallows Part 2, you know, is now number one at the U.S. box office for the year, and it's number three all time worldwide.
Really?
Number three all time. Only behind Avatar and Titanic.
Wow.
Isn't that extraordinary?
That is extraordinary.
Anyway, David Yates and Steve Kloves, who did Yeoman's work, bringing the last four films together, you know, to life, sometimes a little hit and miss, but really, for the most part, trending upwards. And really nailing the conclusion quite powerfully. They are reteaming on a series of films based, and finally, all of us, I'm not a Stephen King fan, and yet even I was waiting for the day when this would be turned into a series of films rather than just a television miniseries. They are creating a series of films adapting Stephen King's The Stand.
Ah.
And what a good team.
What a good team to do that. And actually put some thought into it.
And to do it in a way that maybe opens it up to all ages and all audiences without talking down to any of them.
Right.
Because that's certainly, if you look at their Harry Potters versus, let's say, the Chris Columbus at the beginning, which were children's films, as we discussed.
Yeah.
They are still open for any age group, any audience.
Give it gravity,
but they don't talk down to anybody,
right?
And I think that could, and they're scary sometimes. I mean, the stand is funny and it's scary and it's sexy and exciting and
it's got all that. But I think there's a Stephen King curse of some sort in that its cinematic adaptations have been less than stellar. I mean, I can only think of really Shawshank Redemption and The Shining.
Yeah. Although Kubrick, of course, is famous for having said that he never read the book.
He never read the book, right? So even that's not even a good example. But how many Stephen King novels?
Stand By Me, right? That's one of the famous ones.
That's one of the
and
famous
it's one
ones.
That you don't think of.
That's true. That is true.
But it was based on The Body, right? The short story.
Yeah,
The
that's
Body.
Right. Yeah. And it seems that his short stories are easier to adapt into movies than the full-length graphic horror novel. Not graphic, but his horror novels. So I'll be interested. This is sort of the team that might be able to do that.
I saw a whole lot of other movies I caught up on. Things like Unknown with Liam Neeson.
Oh, yeah.
Sucker Punch.
Oh, yeah.
Battle Los Angeles.
So many
things I caught up on. But really, the only thing that I'm interested in this moment, I find, to talk about is in the context of the big success of Bridesmaids and how it was so refreshing because, you know, a generation of female comedians got a chance to really
be funny.
And isn't that refreshing?
Totally.
Isn't this? I saw the 1939 original of The Women. And this was remade by Diane English a few years ago based on the Claire Booth Luce play.
Yeah.
Directed by George Cukor. Cukor.
Yeah.
And starring the literal who's who.
It was like the big
Norma Shearer.
Norma Shearer. Betty Davis?
No, Joan Crawford.
Oh, Joan Crawford's in that, yes.
The second banana is Rosalind Russell.
I know.
Joan Fontaine. I mean, this is the fun thing. Sidekicks are Joan Fontaine and Rosalind Russell because it's 1939.
Yeah.
Flash forward 1 year to 1940, and those two sidekicks are probably the two biggest women in film because in 1940, Joan Fontaine starring in Rebecca, which wins Best Picture, and Rosalind Russell's in a little thing called His Girl Friday.
Yeah, exactly.
And how great is she in this?
Totally.
I mean, it's like she's kind of my hero. In that film. I mean, never mind, like, you know, it's like, you know.
My Girl Friday.
Yeah, His Girl Friday. Yeah, I mean, she's like, I want to, never mind, I want her. I want to be her.
Oh, I'm so conflicted right now. Yeah, I mean, I don't understand.
Because it is that. Well, and it makes sense, though, because true. His Girl Friday was a gender switch on the front page.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's right.
So anyway,
you saw the women.
The women.
1939.
Classic. Imagine that. And so here we are 72 years later, and wow, it's just refreshing that there was a movie that was all women.
Right.
Yet what was so disgusting, again, is Bridesmaids really wasn't even ultimately about women.
No.
There was the friendship angle, but it kept coming back to men.
Yeah.
In a way that showed them. Right?
Yeah, that
the love interests.
And the love interests and the cop will save the day and all that.
And in the women, you know, the whole movie, you never see a man.
That's right.
In the whole movie, you see no male whatsoever in it. And yeah. It's quite the trick. It is an odd movie because of the time gap and some things that I just don't understand culturally
right.
from it. But really... How about, you know, and the cast just goes on and on and on. Was it Paulette Goddard who is Mrs. Chaplin?
Yes.
She's fantastic.
Right,
in
and
it.
She was almost Scarlett O'Hara, right? She was screen testing for that till Vivien Leigh showed up.
But this movie is really funny and it is really touching, but it goes really dark places. And of course, an interesting time capsule, socially speaking, in the sense that. Much is made in the film of how we are women who are the equals of our men. We are equals of our men, right? And yet, they weren't able to, for example, have careers.
Right.
So there was they were segregated. It was, if they were equal, they were separate but equal.
Right.
It was a segregation, and that's what the movie is about, is this segregation. There's something I got to ask you, though, and you're not American, so... Right. Well, you are American now.
Yes,
so you probably had to study this for your test.
Yes, I did.
There is a thing separate back in that movie, and it's even referenced in Mad Men, when Don Draper and Betty get divorced. Spoiler alert.
Wow.
That's a couple seasons ago.
Damn it.
But about the women going to Reno.
Yes.
What's the deal? Well, women go to Reno to wait for a divorce. What's the deal about Reno?
Well, it's Nevada state law at the time. There was a I forget the specific law, but it was the idea that to get a divorce, other states required infidelity. But in Nevada, the state law was you could just divorce based on irreconcilable differences. So that it was, you didn't have to have adultery or whatever the other.
Why? Why Nevada? How did the law become, why was it so different there?
I think it was, it has to do with also the legalization of gambling and prostitution, that this was a state that had ideal, like quote unquote, looser morals. So that the idea of divorce was a loose moral issue, that a failed marriage was not one of a relationship not working. It was one of a failure of one's own moral or spirituality of some sort. And so, therefore, you went to Reno or even back then Las Vegas. But Reno had more because it was the state capital and still is.
No, Carson City, right? Carson City is the state capital.
Carson City has the capital. Oh, yeah, that's right. So,
but Reno might have been bigger at that time.
Yeah, at that time, and so it had all the courts and the legal proceedings to do that sort of thing. So yeah, there was another movie too that talked recently.
Really?
That I just saw on TV about going to Reno to get for the divorce.
Fascinating.
Yeah,
fascinating.
It's quite fascinating, the history of divorce.
Anyway, it was quite something. I do enjoy. You know, it does the movie work in a modern context? There's some things about it that obviously cinematically don't necessarily work, and some parts that are still a stage play. And of course, they still couldn't quite move cameras at that point.
Yeah, right.
So much, but there was a lot of inventiveness in it. And of course, from a performance standpoint, I mean, these women were all major stars and hugely talented, and they all get to really. Show what they're capable of. And then also from a society standpoint, it's fascinating. Fascinating.
I love it.
Okay, a few topics here I need to hit you with.
Before we go. Yes, hit me.
Has anything ever succeeded on Kickstarter?
Yes.
Everyone's on Kickstarter now.
Colin Hanks movie.
Right. There were three movies or something like that that got, but now there's thousands of film projects on there. And it seems unlikely to me that it will ever.
Yeah.
There's film projects on there trying to get their distribution money that way. Maybe that makes a little more sense. But it seems to me that it's need to have something unique.
About it.
But not even about a movie. You need a unique investment opportunity.
Right.
Entrepreneurial opportunity to really be able to cut through, because it just seems like there's just so much stuff.
Right.
People are inundated with Kickstarter invitations.
I know. And I would think that even if I had $100 to invest and I went to Kickstarter, I would just go, well, here's a dime for everyone sort of thing. And I would never get to the end of all the Kickstarters out there. So, I mean, you know, yes, all of them seem worthy. All of them seem valid. All of them, you know, have hope. And yet, I don't know if this is really wise. It seems that every fundraising idea has to have its own unique thing, just like every movie pitch has to have something. Like that kid who sold just a pixel off his webpage to all these different corporations, and then you click on that pixel and that logo would enlarge, and then he sold a million pixels for a dollar each.
Well, the creativity, the story needs to be embodied in how you're putting together the financing, mm-hmm. in how you make it, and in how you market and distribute it.
Right.
What is your film about? And take what it's about as your marching orders for how you approach the financing, for how you try to reach an audience.
Let that be the organic seed that grows outwards in every direction.
And because then, absolutely, all your energy is put in the same direction.
Yeah.
You are making that movie. It's not like, okay, now we switch hats.
Right.
And now we're making the movie over here.
Now we're going to do that.
Because if Kickstarter really worked, it seems to me that the United States would have been put on Kickstarter a while ago. Because, you know, we got downgraded.
I heard we got that AA.
Yeah.
AA+
or whatever.
So that's pretty good.
From the Standard & Poor's guy who...
Also then told us all our mortgages were AAA awesome.
And Enron.
Yeah.
Right.
And Enron
right
as well.
The day when they were tanking. Oh, yeah, AAA. And
so let us
also the largest single investor in the what's his name? Mitt Romney campaign.
Yeah, that's right.
So. Not that that doesn't mean it means anything. Of course, as a private citizen, he's allowed to put his money wherever he wants. We have not addressed at all the... Oh, by the way, are we going in for another double-dip recession, or is the fear behind that now? Is the fear behind us that, like, it's not going to be as... It seems like a week ago, again, the sky was fucking falling.
Right. But I only know this from being on the front line of talking to America. Every convention I go to, the stand-up clubs, I face America daily.
Right.
And what I see is there's still people not working, still people who wish they had money and don't. A lot of those people. And so I think...
And an incredibly growing frustration, clearly,
yes.
over the fact that no one... has any ideas or any answers.
Right.
You know, I was watching a great deal over this weekend coverage of the Iowa straw polls.
Oh, I could not even
bother. Oh, my God. Here's the thing about 24-hour news cycles.
Yes.
You know, when I was coming of age and becoming interested in politics, you heard about the Iowa straw polls for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it was on to the next thing. Because, oh, by the way... there isn't anything else until the caucuses begin 6 months from now. And where do they begin? Iowa.
Yeah.
Jesus, so for 6 months, it's going to be all about Iowa.
I know.
This is why I hate election years. I like the other 3 years where I can forget that there is an Iowa.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you're in Iowa, I'm sorry. I've never been there. It's just you understand my frustration over all the – it's all about these politicians going there. But it was interesting because the Republican debate, seeing it, you know – there are a couple of people, I'm not going to mention names, but there are a couple of people who offered some expert opinions.
Yeah.
Some expert insight. Just have expertise in a couple of things. And it's so what is lacking at any point. Why can we not have a team of people who bring expertise to Washington? You don't need to be an expert on anything, on everything. But when you are... offer your expertise at something.
That's
and
right.
We can combine our expertise in some such a way that we can build something new.
New.
Something creative that might address the changing world.
Right. And sort of not go, oh, well, you are appointed by that guy or whatever, and then throw away all of that intelligence and all of that training.
Where is the expertise? I mean, I don't even... You know, people love to complain about the fact that, you know, politicians are all lawyers or this or whatever. But I hear attorney generals of like, the attorney general of, I think it was Arizona, I heard in an interview. She was like a sorority valley girl. The use of language was so
pathetic,
imprecise.
Yes.
And what happened to expertise in different fields?
That's elitist. That's when you're not of the people when you're an expert. Well, you know, you're bringing this up now with 1 minute.
It's
like a whole nother show. Well, to talk about this.
The other thing is, do you have any thoughts at all? I mean, about these riots in the UK. I mean, we didn't really talk about this. We have so many friends there.
Yes, we
and everything. And I mean, we didn't talk about it last week. But what would you say? I mean,
I would say that.
How do you make sense out of this?
Yeah, I know it's really tough, you know, there's been some. Nights when the bars got out that it seemed like a riot even before it was a riot. So, you know, there is a culture there that's a generation that seems, in my old man way, all scared. I'm scared of that new breed of kids. But it's also, you know.
But we had it here.
We had it here. And they had it back in the 70s when punk rock was starting. I mean, that seems scary, too. All that anger and frustration and Thatcherism and all that sort of thing. So
I'm going to be on Southside Radio, I think this week.
Awesome.
On the midweek drive.
Yep.
With Alex, the host, and I'm going to ask him
all about it.
About it, and
let's talk about that.
And then we'll talk about it next week.
I would love
Meanwhile,
that.
We'll close with one little news story. I'm sure you were too busy to hear about the Beverly Hills Police Department blew up an aspiring screenwriter's laptop. Which, by the way, given what I've been going through, too soon, because my laptop has been blown up entirely. My HP 7B is in the Deathly Hallows. But the Beverly Hills Police Department blew up an aspiring screenwriter's laptop and script because they believed it to be a suspicious package.
Well, where did he leave it?
Probably like at a coffee shop or somewhere, or, you know, I didn't get into the details of it because I just love that they had to justify that it was, you know what, you don't have to justify it. Look, too much money is being wasted on bad projects. The Beverly Hills Police Department can just admit that they're film critics like the rest of us are, and you know why they did what they did? Because they could already tell that thing was a bomb.
Ah, zinga. Till next week, I'm Dean Haglund.
I'm Phil Lernis. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/ChillPackHollywood, and write us at ChillPackHollywood@yahoo.com. We love hearing from you. That's why we call it your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, because whatever you want us to talk about, we will.
That's right.
See you next week.